I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Real Spoilers, powered by ReviewSTL.com.
Warning, the following film discussion will ruin the ending of any movie you haven't seen. Example, Bruce Willis is dead at the end of The Sixth Sense. See how I ruined it for you? Just like that. Here are a few more.
Silent breed is people!
I am the father.
Get it?
Real Spoilers. You've been warned.
Broadcasting from the lush but not lavish studios located in the basement of the O'Keefe Institute for Advanced Film Snarkitude, this is Real Spoilers, episode 482, Rocket Man.
The second biopic.
The music biopic, I guess, of the year.
Last year's.
Was it really?
Yeah, it already won an Oscar.
Oscars. Honestly, they just run together at this point.
Older you get, the worse it gets, man. I don't know how to break it to you, but
great.
That's not going to get better.
Good. Wonderful.
So,
massive brain injuries also don't help.
Yes.
Yeah.
So let's go around the table and everybody can introduce themselves.
This is Joe.
This is Kevin.
And this is Tom. Quick shameless plugs. Don't forget, we're available on Apple Podcasts, where you can go there, rate, review, subscribe. And of course, Facebook.com/Real Spoilers, where you can join the League of Show Sharers. People who were kind enough to join the league this week: Ralph Tribble, Zara Vandekriek.
Our new favorite name.
Yes.
She does sound like she would be on like Falcon's Crest.
Yeah, that's a good one too. Yeah. Griffin Fox Smith, Susan Carlson, Jason Weese, Lane LeVanway, Travis Tewitt, Brent Smith, Laura Conley Quiddick, Julianne Jordan, Troy Anspaw, Chris Sanders, Tom Comiskey, Tammy Sherman Powers, Ron Johnson, Gabriel Lugo, Aaron Marlowe, Timmy Tuzoons, Chris Magic Man, and Ron Johnson. So thank you so much for sharing
Ron
the show.
Ron Johnson was a duplicate too.
Was he? God damn it. Yep. Let me tell I did this. So I got up super early. I've been up since like 4 o'clock because my son went to Europe on a school trip.
Oh.
And so we had to have him at the airport at 5:10.
This morning? I saw those pictures. I didn't realize they were from this morning.
I didn't realize that either.
I thought they were from yesterday.
Yeah, no, that was from this morning.
I guess you don't. Well, what? He's going to Europe. He's going to Europe.
Yeah. I don't think anybody's
Euro
going.
Euro trip?
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
I love that movie.
He's going
so much.
To Italy and France. And I actually, in France, I paid extra so he could see a lady's underpants.
Dang it. Stole my joke. It's weird. Like that one, Euro trip and Sex Drive I'm just old enough where I was like, nah.
Euro trip is so
like, it, for
funny.
Me, it was like Road Trip. American
Pie.
Yeah,
see, I would take Euro Trip over Road Trip.
Oh, no. Road Trip's way funnier.
I've never seen any of them.
Yeah, I mean, Road Trip is good stuff.
I saw Sex Drive.
Yeah.
And there were parts I liked.
That's kind of where I'm at.
Wait, like, Sex Drive is way later, though. Like, a little bit later. Euro Trip was first.
Euro Trip is absolutely first. Yeah. But I feel like there was that next wave.
That was before Clark Duke was a thing.
Man, he's so good.
It was when they were trying to replicate American Pie.
They were.
Yeah.
It was like American Pie, Road Trip, and then there was a bunch of other not another teen movie. Like there was a bunch of like rated R.
My favorite part of Sex Drive was Seth Green as the Amish guy. Like that was great.
I liked Sex Drive too. I mean, it's not one that like I watched 3 times a year or anything like that. But when I saw it, I'm like, oh, this is fun.
Scotty doesn't know.
Yeah,
it's one of the best cameos.
Which one
is Matt Damon?
Well, that's Euro Trip.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was
jump around quick, man.
I said Euro Trip.
Scotty doesn't.
Scotty doesn't.
Know.
Okay. Yeah.
So
your mind works
starring
ways, Joe.
Lana Lang is the girlfriend. Kristen from Kruk or whatever her name was from Smallville.
Oh, okay.
Was the girlfriend in that movie?
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
If you say so.
The more you know. Imagine the star floating over your head right now.
So, yeah. So, what else? Oh, we have a Patreon account, patreon.com/realspoilers, where if you want to throw in $5 a month, you'll get some bonus content and our eternal gratitude.
Yep. And got, I told got you a couple Batman episodes dropping. I heard Joe mention it last week. So this week, I think I'm going to do the Justice League one first, since everyone's seen Batman. and then we'll go to our favorite Batman 89.
That is my favorite Batman movie.
It's great.
Yeah, awesome. Dark Knight, I guess, is pretty good.
Yeah, it's okay.
Yeah.
So there's all of that. I guess we'll dig into the movie proper. I could, the whole time I was watching the movie, all I could think is Joe is going to love this.
You got Joe to see a musical again.
Joe is going to love
that goddamn movie. Started, and I was like, those sons of bitches got me again.
We should talk. So this is really interesting. Tom and I are fans of musicals. Yes. I think most people know that.
Yeah.
Like in general, Broadway or movie musicals, we both love those. This movie, going into it, I wasn't sure what to expect. And you have movies like Mamma Mia. Like, I really enjoyed the first one.
Right.
The music's great. But, you know, it's just regular characters busting into song. It's a jukebox musical.
It's a jukebox musical,
so,
yeah.
So this movie's a biopic, but they break into songs. I've never seen a biopic musical.
I'm just curious before we dig in too far. Did you end up liking it or no?
I was fine with it.
I was just curious.
I like Elton John.
Right.
I dig his music.
Yeah.
So... And I think Taron Egerton was
amazing.
Out of this world.
Phenomenal.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Gloves are off.
Yeah.
Gloves are off.
I didn't know what to expect.
Yeah.
He's one of those guys.
He looked just like him, and he sounded great.
Dude. He did. So he sang.
If
Rami Malek gets an Oscar.
I agree.
Taron Egerton automatically gets an Oscar.
Totally. Yeah, because I mean, like.
Rami Malek sing?
He didn't sing.
No, he didn't sing.
They had like a voiceover guy, right?
Rami's performance looks like.
They used a Freddie Mercury impersonator by the name of Mark Mattel or Martel.
Okay.
Like that.
It was actually just Mark Maron.
Oh, was that stage?
Oh, my God. Yeah. Sign me up for that movie.
So, I mean, okay. I really like Rami Malek. I like
Absolutely.
I like Short Term 12 is where I first saw him. Mr. Robot, I do a podcast on it. I really like Rami Malek.
Yeah.
His performance is a joke compared to this.
Here's the difference. His performance is an impersonation.
Yeah.
And if you ever wonder when you hear people talk about the difference between an impersonation and a performance,
this is it.
These two roles side by side are the difference. And again, I'm not trying to take away from what Rami Malek did because he did a great
Oscar, right?
Yeah.
But it looks so cartoony. It's like someone clearly trying to.
I guess
pretend
I feel
like, to, like
but,
it,
but his
but Freddie Mercury is cartoony,
is, right? Like he is. Like his face is different. You know what I mean? Like
I know
so they had
but,
to add prosthetics.
But Rami Malek did not disappear into Freddie Mercury. Knowing Rami Malek, I looked and I'm like, that's Rami Malek. Sure, he looks kind of like him sometimes. They did a good job with hair and whatever.
Sure.
But I'm like, every time he talked, I just saw Rami Malek. In this movie,
yeah.
I'm like, Taron Egerton freaking became Elton John. Yeah, he's disappeared into
it's
the
funny because as I'm saying, but Freddie Mercury's cartooning, I'm like, oh, and Elton John's not?
Right. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. I feel like they need to do a trifecta and they need to get that David Bowie movie, like, in the works and just knock these three legends out and just call it a
day. I honestly don't know enough about his personal life. Is it interesting?
I would assume
he
so.
Doesn't seem like a lot, like there was a lot of drama around the dude.
But what an interesting guy. He seems
interesting,
more together,
but
I
like
guess.
Internal.
Yeah.
You know
yeah.
I mean?
He's just an artist. You wonder if there's any, I mean, did he do any memoirs or writings or anything?
Didn't he run around? Isn't he involved in that story with who's the gal that was off the boat?
Oh, I don't think so.
The actress that got thrown off the boat, that disappeared off the boat. It was
the one where Christopher Walken was.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah.
Robert Wagner.
Robert
and Natalie
Wagner.
Wood.
I thought there was a like he's in that story somewhere.
Oh, is he?
It's Christopher Walken's the one.
Is
that's
that what
always,
it is?
Yeah,
that was there.
But Christopher Walken was there.
Robert
Wagner was having like that wasn't that allegedly? Good Lord, let's say that.
Yeah,
but wasn't he like involved with another dude? And Natalie Wood found out.
That might be a rumor.
I don't know enough about that story to talk about it. But anyway, I don't know that much about Bowie's life other than his original name was David Jones. But I've never been a Bowie guy.
Yeah.
I'm an early
Bowie
guy.
Oh, Dan was here. I know. He would have fallen right out of his chair.
He knows that I just like it just I yeah. like it.
Kind of like I'm an early Elton John guy too.
I mean, Bohemian Rhapsody. I was very lukewarm on that movie. I never thought it was great. To me, it seemed like a Lifetime movie. I did not. I mean, this movie was fantastic and it was different. I mean, for a biopic musical, I've never seen anything like it.
No, What Dexter Fletcher, is that his name?
Also directed Bohemian Rhapsody.
Well,
which is
at the end, he came in and cleaned it up. But and it's interesting how different they are. Yeah. You know what I mean? That he could, you know. But
this one, it was clearly his vision. Right. The other one, he had to come in. But I feel like it's like almost just like a technicality. Like Bryan Singer directed enough to get the credit for it. But I still feel like he had a lot of directing. But you're right; he was taking over.
Right.
There was like that one was more this. So this one is more fantastical, I guess, is the best way to describe it.
He has reinvented the film biopic genre.
Yeah, so,
I will also say I don't know that this can be duplicated in that.
No.
I don't know that you could apply this to another performer, this type of storytelling.
Yeah.
You mean like the just
the dreamlike quality and the musical numbers.
I think they'll try. I think someone else will try because this was so good.
Prince is the only one, or Bowie. Like
Bowie actually would be
the,
you know, with having rocket ships blast off and stuff, whatever. You know, he just spacemen floating around.
Yeah.
But this movie, it really worked. It was very, you know, original for that reason. I had never seen that happen in a biopic, and it just felt so believable with the performances. It was great.
This my problem with musicals is like I am immediately like when they break into song, I'm immediately taken out of it. But this one, since it's all basically set in like this dream world, I was able to accept what was happening. And well, like there's the whole scene where he gets, you know, he lifts the entire you know when he's doing the Crocodile Rock and the entire crowd comes off its feet
and
it's just like
that was in the trailer.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I hated it.
Oh, see, that's why I don't watch trailers.
And like the trailer ended with that and it's like based on a true fantasy and I'm like, this looks like the dumbest movie I've ever seen in my life. In context,
but it worked.
It totally works.
Yeah,
that when they all drop at the same time and keep rocking was so cool.
Yeah, and even
that's one of the first rock songs I remember knowing the words to.
And even the slug line based on a true fantasy. Now that I've seen the movie, I'm like, yes,
right.
That is an accurate description.
And Elton John says, I mean, when in interviews about this movie, he's like, that's how it felt. Like, you know, he was out there, and then of course with drugs and everything, he's like, I felt like the things were floating and, you know, it's so really in, obviously in his mind, he was escaping through his imagination and all this stuff.
Sure.
And, but and the other thing I want to say is that I think the closest thing that I can think of to this film would be Across the Universe. It's just not a biopic.
I was thinking the same thing, which I also find interesting because I hate that movie with the intensity of a thousand white hot suns. I think that movie is a big steaming turd burger.
I also hate that movie.
And I hated everything about it.
Okay.
Like
I love that movie.
I wished we were recording movies back or recording episodes back.
Wow.
Because like watching that movie, it was probably very funny because I was just I couldn't stop insulting the movie.
It's a jukebox musical.
That scene where where they carry the Statue of Liberty.
Right.
And I was like, please don't. Please don't. Just please don't. Just please don't.
Oh,
they did
it.
And then, you know, like, she's not heavy. I'm like, oh my God. Really? That on the nose? That's what we're doing? Like, I legit laughed out loud. Like, I was just like, that is so stupid.
It is. It's so funny you should say that. Like, I remember, so the trailer I got for this one is that flick where the Beatles get erased.
Yeah, yesterday.
And it looks great.
Can't
that
wait.
Looks pretty awesome.
Yeah.
That doesn't seem like
127 hours. Guys.
Is that right?
Yeah.
The same director?
Yeah. Danny Boyle.
Yeah, it's Danny Boyle.
Oh, man.
I think that looks great.
Yeah, it does
interesting
look
interesting for him.
It is interesting. Well, I mean, yeah, I guess it is.
I mean, it's just to do like a little music.
Danny
Boyle
is one of those directors where you're just like, what?
He's versatile.
Boyle did a zombie movie?
Yeah, he does zombies and all sorts of stuff.
Well, so, I guess let's dig into the movie.
Yeah, so the whole movie basically opens up with Taron Egerton, who again, like, it's insane to me, this dude that we've seen that's kind of not really figured it out yet. Like,
I would have never seen him as a flashy character. Like, you know, he's Kingsman, he's very reserved, and, you know, he plays a guy that's just kind of like your average guy, like, trying to figure stuff out.
Right.
And then Elton John is a larger-than-life
person. Well, he was Robin Hood, and then he's, it's
well,
funny
I've
because,
totally forgot about
but I'm just
that.
Saying, like, that's where he's at in his career, you know?
But, yeah, to play Elton John, I mean, I would have never seen it, and it's like, not only they got him to look like him,
the
hair. The
hair, the glasses, the face, the gap in his teeth.
Yeah, and I think he studied and studied and studied in the mannerisms, the way he talked, the way he sang.
Well, that's
it's
so crazy. So in Sing, he's the voice of the gorilla.
Oh, yeah, he's really good.
And he sings I'm Still Standing.
Oh, okay.
Oh, that's funny.
But I didn't realize that.
But it doesn't. But it's crazy because he sings it in Sing as his voice.
As
Taron Egerton.
Oh, right, right.
But then when you hear him do the exact same song, that's to me, that's when I heard like the different inflections and like he changed his voice.
Oh, there were times
voice.
Where there was singing that he was doing and I thought they were going to pull in Elton John because it sounded so much like Elton John.
Yeah, except and I don't know how familiar you are with Elton John. Not that you don't know the songs.
I knew the songs,
but being older and growing up with like I've heard those songs a million times on rock radio, and so it's like I mean I could instantly tell even when he sounded like him that I was like these are not the original recordings. These are
I
mean, and obviously there are some parts that we'll get to.
No, the songs sounded different.
That are obviously original recordings, but when they did concert stuff. That I was like, no, this is all new.
Totally. Where,
like the Queen stuff, even though it was new vocals, didn't sound like new vocals.
They emulate it pretty closely. Yeah. But I think that's the great thing about it is, again, you know, they're pulling off an impersonation. They're trying to make it sound exactly like the thing,
right.
Which it really can't sound just like it. I mean, it can be close.
The only thing you could do is just use the original recordings.
Right.
I mean, then it would sound like it.
Right.
Know?
That's the
but
only
it, but
way.
But here, since you know they're doing their own thing, it's like, I don't want it to sound just like it. I want them to recreate
it. I'll be interested to see how people react to the fact that, like, the songs sound different. And sometimes different characters are singing the lyrics because it's treated as a musical.
Right, yeah.
And I thought that served the film extraordinarily well because
that you got different versions of it.
Yeah, like because even
people
when
in his life were singing the different parts, which surprised me. I didn't expect other people to jump
in.
For
the most part, the arrangements weren't wildly different. There were times when they were, but for the most part, they weren't wildly different. But they were just different enough that it forced you to listen to the words in a way that you wouldn't if it were the original versions. Because you know we've heard Rocket Man and Daniel and Tiny Dancer so many times.
Tony Danza.
That
hold me closer, Tony Danza.
That they're the equivalent of sonic wallpaper.
That's true,
and
just that sound is just ingrained,
right? And that by doing it this way, you were kind of forced to hear the lyrics in a new way.
Sure, which is impressive.
When I go to something like this, I don't want to go sit through just like a total recreation. I want to experience something new. It's just boring to hear the same stuff over and over. Like I want their take on it. I want Taron Egerton. I think it's so much more impressive the way they did this. Just because, you know, you're watching a movie, you're not watching a documentary.
Right.
So I would like your take and. It was different enough to keep it interesting, but also again the look and the sound was there and the feel was there.
It reminded me of a Baz Luhrmann flick.
Well, yeah. Well, it's got one of the same songs.
Well, that's true. Yeah, that's a good point.
But it was very stylized. Jeez, I can't remember the last time I really saw someone in a biopic type film, just a regular biopic, like disappear so much into it.
Yeah.
And again, I'm not super close to Elton John, but he's been around my whole life. I mean, and I will tell you, the casting for all the Eltons was amazing.
You
those
mean,
kids,
like, the
okay,
ages,
well,
sure.
First
sure.
of all, Taron Egerton looked just like Elton John. You know, he got that down. And then those two kids they cast as the younger Eltons looked just like Taron Egerton, and also just like Elton John. Like
well,
at the end when they showed the split,
So,
but it was looking at the kids, you know, and I was thinking Taron Egerton in my mind, and I'm like, that casting was spot on.
Yeah.
And then you see how close it was to Elton. So it's like all of them share this similarity.
Weird.
Like,
I mean, it's amazing when you have a good casting director who's just like, yeah, you kind of look like
Did
the
you
guy.
See who else was up for the roles, though?
No.
Justin Timberlake was one choice.
That would
and then
not
did,
have worked.
Who was the other?
I don't know. He's a good actor.
He's
it's
good
not,
with that voice.
That's
he's
what
just,
I'm saying.
He always sounds like he
has
so light. It's,
he's
you know,
got
it's
he's got
that
JT voice.
Yeah.
And I don't
but
know
I mean,
if he could've...
I think he cannot do that voice, though. I think,
maybe.
I mean, you
but,
know.
But I know what Joe means, though, because I like Justin Timberlake as an actor.
I
just...
think his probably would have veered closer to the impersonation that we talked about earlier.
His voice, I mean, Justin Timberlake has one of the most distinct voice. When you hear him in Trolls, it's like that's clearly JT. You know, some actors, Alan Tudyk, which you were right, he is Iago.
I thought so.
You guessed it on the show, but I'm like, he's 100% right. That's Alan Tudyk does every animal.
I know.
Disney.
Disney's like, we have an animal, call Alan Tudyk.
Yeah, so, Justin Timberlake, when you hear his voice, you know it's him. And again, love the guy, saw him in concert, like, he's great. Yeah. It's just that...
Dude's a triple threat.
That voice, he's a quadruple threat, whatever.
Well, he's a
He's done it all.
A quintuple threat when you look at his old lady.
So
or the list of his old ladies.
Yeah, and then the other one, I'm trying to remember. Do you remember who the other one was? Justin Timberlake was one of the newer ones. Oh, it was crap, I'm losing it here. Tom Hardy.
That would have been
Tom Hardy
that
was
I
the
find
original.
Harder to see.
He was the original one, and then
he was like, I'm gonna go do Venom.
I can see Tom Hardy if they, you know, give him the right haircut and
can
put
he
the
sing?
Glasses and stuff. I think he can. Does he sing in that Reese Witherspoon movie with Chris Pine?
Oh,
maybe
I don't
I'm just
know.
Thinking of Chris Pine singing and other stuff. I feel like maybe there was a little singing scene, but anyway, that was the first choice, and then Justin Timberlake was thrown around, but I think they nailed it.
Well, it's also the advantage is Taron Egerton is still, I'm not going to say he's an unknown, but he's definitely not as known as Tom Hardy or Justin Timberlake.
Right. He can disappear
so he,
into
yeah,
a role.
Exactly.
A bit more.
Exactly.
I totally see that.
Yeah.
So the beginning, I actually walked in, like usually I go to the theater with 23 minutes of previews, and I walked in like 15 minutes into it thinking, well, clearly I have more time. And they're even like, yeah, it's going to start soon. You're good. And it was already going, but I must have just missed the very beginning.
Oh,
he's
so
walking
it's just,
down
he's,
the street in a costume.
Okay. So he's walking into just this bright, he's surrounded by white light, mm-hmm. and he's in this crazy devil. Yeah. Costume you've seen I mean you've the, I will
and
say
I see it bookends here
it does yeah the costume designer better win something because
when you saw those
shite.
Comparison photos
yeah like
they,
that's
yeah they, I don't know how does that work because like they have a category for adapted screenplay do they have a category for adapted costume design
no
because they're just replicating what already exists
but they were different they were like they were inspired by them, but the differences were still there. Like,
okay.
Like with the Queen makeup,
yeah,
he had makeup on and stuff where Elton didn't, and it looked different. So I really don't think it was, it's a weird thing because it looked so good and so similar,
yeah.
but really they did their own spin.
Right.
So I feel like it has a chance, but it just depends on what else comes out.
Yeah,
like,
sure,
I mean,
yeah.
it has a chance because it's good enough to.
X-Men
but,
Dark Phoenix, for example.
Oh, goodness.
Absolutely.
I can't believe that comes out in a week. Like, that movie's been so under my radar that
it's for
really
the best
coming out like a month ago.
Disney's like, can we bury this?
Yeah, on Twitter or something. I feel like I was like, this comes out in a month?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, yeah. So it opens with him in this lavish costume walking into. Like a
an AA meeting,
and you just and it's all you think, it's all in his head, and you don't really know what to think because this movie's it is crazy out there. It is very dreamlike and fantastical. So he sits down and he starts going through his life story, and he starts talking about when he was a child and like he was this prodigy. And I don't know a lot about Elton John's past or his personal life. I remember like the drugs. I remember that being like. A thing like that's one of the first like celebrities that I remember admitting that they had a problem. You
he's
know, like
also
was,
the first celebrity I remember coming out.
Yeah,
you know, yeah. I remember it as he initially came out as bi, and
okay,
and then eventually was like, yeah, that's very common. Especially back then among gay people that they kind of stair step it and they're like, oh, I'm bi.
Right.
Because it kind of gives them a safety zone.
And then
later. And then they're like,
it's ridiculous.
And it's also why a lot of gay people like don't believe people when they say they're bi.
Sure.
They're like, you are. Yeah.
Sure. We'll go with that.
Yeah.
It's I have a friend who is bi and she's just like, it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
And it's
what
people don't
more
believe.
Specific.
No, people don't believe.
Oh,
her.
Okay.
Not
he said,
that.
I have a friend who's bi, and she says it's unbelievable.
No. Like it's a struggle for her because it's a constant struggle because people are just like, you know, you're not like you're either straight or you're gay. Like, you don't get to be either way.
Both communities,
yes, exactly.
tend not to believe.
Well, correct.
Right.
Yeah. Correct.
But yeah, I hate seeing that when you've got people that are so about different rights for people. But then, like, I guess it's kind of like religion, where religion is like they'll be so crappy to certain people. And then they'll be like, you know, whatever, lives matter and this and that. And then they'll disown a certain person. You know, it's like I really like those memes that are like transgender people have heartbeats, you know, things like that. Because it's like you're pro-life, but then you're totally disowned.
Let's not start that topic.
But you know what I mean? It's like you have to – you can't just pick and choose who you want to –
No,
you know, if you're saying stuff like all these people matter or whatever, but these, you know, so
but
I just,
not these people.
I just hate that when they get disowned. It's like, no, you want to help this group of people with their rights. Like you should be for everyone having better rights and better lives.
It's always important,
you know. So I hate hearing that.
Yeah.
But the big takeaway here is that he had a really crappy home life. Like,
yeah.
I had no idea
I didn't know this
about
part
his childhood.
Yeah.
And, like, his dad was a total, you know, just like...
This entire cast are Brits and Irishmen and Scotmen.
The Bryce Dallas Howard
but
thing
Bryce
is a head
Dallas
scratcher,
Howard.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
I thought she was good, but I'm
she
like...
She was fine. Like, the accent was
but
good.
But the cast
like,
in American.
Yeah.
It's really
out
interesting.
Of all of these people.
Yeah.
It's just like, where did Bryce Dallas Howard come from in all of this?
I thought it was... I mean, she did a really good job, and I was so confused by it that I thought it was Jessica Chastain. Because I'm just like...
Also American, so to speak.
I know, but I like... I feel... I like them both, but I feel like Jessica Chastain is on a little bit higher trajectory.
I would agree with that. I would agree.
I just... I felt like, well,
we're gonna
anyone's...
see her later this year.
Yeah, but I'm like, if anyone's gonna be pretending to have a British accent,
right?
Blah, blah. And then I saw it was Bryce Dallas Howard. I'm like, holy crap!
Yeah, I didn't even realize it was her, to be honest.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah,
really?
Exactly. Yeah. I didn't either. So it's like, but those two, I think, are very simple. Like,
I could see that.
I just see the similarities there. But so the mom was very like,
she's
uninterested.
She's promiscuous. She's uninterested in the boy.
I didn't take it as she was promiscuous.
Oh, I did.
I did.
I guess she was just having an
affair.
She
had an affair.
Well, I think...
And
but,
the husband was
But she
awful.
Was in a completely loveless marriage with a complete a-hole.
Yeah.
And then she stays with that guy for the rest of the
film.
Oh,
I guess that's...
Yeah.
It is the guy in the car, isn't it?
Yeah. So, and like, I don't think she was promiscuous at all.
I was thinking the guy in the car was different.
Yeah.
But you're right. That is the same
guy. That husband, Elton's dad, is a terrible, awful... I mean, just a horrible person.
He's a magnificent actor.
Oh,
he's been
yeah.
I can't think of what his name is, but he's been in a
performance
was
great because that's why you especially hate him.
Yeah,
like,
right.
So yeah, it's just him growing up with that, and then he wants to take piano lessons, and the whole time
well,
you
he
get
plays,
the vibe.
He plays like a like, you know, he just picks up and starts playing.
Yeah, he can play by ear,
right? And then
and you just get the idea though. The dad is always like, so he's looking at a dress, a designer catalog,
yeah.
You know,
like,
and
don't be a girl,
yeah, and that's yeah. Or what are you, a girl or whatever? Yeah. And so you get this whole thing where he isn't interested in the same thing. Like, he doesn't want Elton to be into these things because they're not manly enough, and
yeah.
He's a jerk to him about touching his record collection. Everything Elton does is wrong.
Oh
in
man,
this
that scene where he
the record collection thing was really awful because it's like here's the thing where that you could use to bond with your child over
right.
like you found common
yeah,
ground
you both
and,
are
you,
into music.
And you just pissed on it
right
like
yeah.
That, oh.
there's a scene later in the movie where when Elton is, you know, he's Elton John at this point,
yeah,
he goes to see his dad because they're trying to anytime like they're trying to head off any stories,
yeah,
so he goes to see the old man. The old man's like, hey, can you sign this record? And he was like, absolutely. And he signed, you know, to dad. He was like, actually, it's for a guy at work. And I was like, ugh.
It's like, that scene is so, like, heartbreaking because he starts like, hey, would you sign this record?
And he's like, absolutely.
And you're just like, how sad that you, like, are so far away from your son that you ask for an autograph.
Right, right.
And then it's like, oh, it's not for me. I still don't care.
Yeah, I don't like your music.
That was heartbreaking.
Yeah,
and Edgerton.
He has to scratch it out.
Yeah.
He has to scratch out the word dad and then write Arthur underneath it. Oh,
yeah.
That was a gut punch.
Yeah. And that performance was great.
It's crazy to think that we've only seen him in these not very taxing acting roles, but he can act like the dude. I totally agree that if Rami Malek can win an Oscar for Freddie Mercury,
yeah.
How does he not win?
He was in that one with Hugh Jackman, which was more of an art house type of movies. But I mean, that was a not like a Robin Hood.
The Eagle?
Yeah.
Okay.
But, you know, that was a little more taxing than Robin Hood, Kingsman.
Sure.
Type.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
You know, the Kingsman movies are awesome. It's just, you're right.
You didn't even like the second one.
Well, no, I mean, they're cool movies.
Yeah,
that's what I mean. You know, they're cool, but I wouldn't call it like, you know.
It's not high art.
Yeah, it's not as high. Yeah. No, the second one was very disappointing. Oh boy. Hey, we got a dog visitor. Hello. Would you like to give your opinion on Elton John?
No, it was great.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Dog can actually talk. I was expecting some barks, but that was really impressive.
No,
are we in a fantastical
dog. Yeah, I think we are.
I think you need to bust into singing right now. So I mean, basically, we don't have to stay too long in Kidville.
No,
and like,
because like we do, we run through. He has his own. It's very similar to Queen and Bohemian Rhapsody, where like he has this band and they're not, you know, they're just kind of this band. And they
but first, as a kid though, just real quick, he starts playing a piano and he can just pick up things that he hears. And then
I did like that scene.
And then is it the grandma? I guess
the grandma kind of starts to like push him. Like, we're gonna do this. You're gonna be fine.
We need to get him lessons. And the mom's like, I can't take him. And the grandma's like, I can take him.
Yeah,
and
he goes to like a recital. Like it's
well,
like
the piano
like a
teacher comes over.
Or something.
Well, the piano teacher comes over, and then he thinks he's good enough to get a
scholarship
to, what is it, like the Royal Academy?
Yeah, the Royal Academy of Music.
And so he's just great. He can, and I mean, he plays something that the teacher was playing on the piano.
I like that.
He doesn't
scene
bring music.
I
and
like that scene a lot.
He stops.
Like,
why'd you stop? Because
that's
as far
stopped
as you played. So obviously it shows he was a prodigy. He can play. And so, you know, he grows up through all that. And then this is where he gets into a band.
Yeah.
And then it's just the time jump happens when he escapes into this like carnival circus thing.
So that's the time jump from he goes to Taron Egerton.
Mm-hmm.
Like
yeah.
It's yeah.
And which I liked. Okay. As much as I thought the casting was spot and everything, like I didn't think the kid's voice was very good. Like this movie didn't really click until once Taron Egerton, once
yeah
it went to that transition.
Yeah.
I mean, as much as like the grandma, the kid, I'm just like the voices weren't doing it for me.
Well,
they just weren't.
The little kid, I thought his voice was very jazz hands.
Yeah, I could see that.
You know what
yeah
I mean? Like, and
I just didn't, I was just like not, I couldn't get into it.
That's also he sang Bitches Back, which is also a very big song.
Okay, right. Yeah.
You know.
So I was very underwhelmed, and when it turns into Taron Egerton and they're
yeah
doing the dance at the carnival and stuff, I'm like, holy crap, okay, this
game
kicked
on
into gear. Now
right
we're getting it. And so you see that growing up, he's in a band, he's doing,
he's a backup band
yeah
for this.
For an American
yeah
like
soul.
A soul
traveling soul.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I do, this is great where like they're, like he's learning about who he needs to be or who he wants to be. And he's sitting in the car and he was like, I think I'm going to change my name. And his other bandmate, his name is Elton Daniels or something. Yeah. He was like, I think I'm going to change my name to Elton. And the guy's like, no, like
yeah
that's my, no, you're not going to do that. So he's like, he's working with this band and he has his, like his first kiss with this dude. And even he's kind of like thrown off because he's like, obviously he knows that he's gay, but
like he doesn't know yet. He's still trying to figure it out.
He's still trying to figure it out.
It's not like he was against it. It's just he's figuring stuff out. But like you can tell that from these other guys from traveling with him and this guy specifically, they know. I
right
mean, later
they
on,
know
they all we see they all know. But so they could tell. And so, you know, the guy kisses him and he just embraces it because he's like, oh, OK,
OK, let's do it.
Yeah.
So then he goes and meets with these two record execs. Well, this one record exec. Well, this guy who works for a record exec. And he sits down, and I love that this is the guy that played Al Capone on Boardwalk Empire.
Okay.
He's been in a bunch of other stuff. So he kind of like, this dude kind of walks in on this not exec interviewing Elton John. And he's like, oh, we got to go. And
he
got to bail.
Yeah, he met the writing partner.
Well, he hasn't met him. Like,
oh,
He hands him.
Yeah.
He's like,
yeah,
try to put these to lyrics or to music. And he was like, okay.
Well, and that's because Elton, as good as he was a musician, he says he can't write lyrics.
You know,
he can make up the songs. And so this guy, gives him these random things that people have been sending in. There's scripts to try to get their songs made.
And this is Billy Elliot.
Yep.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And Ben Grimm. But we don't talk about that.
Oh, I forgot that
he was
Ben
Grimm in the Fantastic that awful Josh Trank movie.
Yeah.
What's his name?
Jesse Bell.
Yeah. They become like it's
he's really grown up, you know, because I saw him first
he's
in
really
Billy Elliot.
Yeah.
And it's just weird in this one where he's got longer hair and, you know, he's got the good facial structure. Like I just always see him as little Billy Elliot.
Right.
And so I feel like at
and
this
not
point
Ben Grimm?
Yeah, I don't think of him as Ben Grimm. Sorry, Joe. But it's like, wow, he actually, I think, has finally grown out of that. I mean, not like he just did yesterday, but, you know, I don't see him as that kid anymore. I mean, he's really good, and he's at the age where it's like, okay, he's an adult.
Right.
And, you know, he's doing his own thing and not obviously writing on
that. He didn't Jonathan Libnicki it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
They create this friendship and this bond, and it's strong because, like, they live together, and they're writing songs, and
Not yet.
Well, I guess that's true. Yeah. They sit down and
they mail each other stuff back and forth. And as much as they think they've got great stuff, because they have over 100 songs,
right?
And the actual record exec listens,
it's
and
like
he's just
garbage.
Like, crap. Everything they play is crap. And he's like, what songwriting duo doesn't live together? So he tells them, you guys go live together, work together. You know,
but also the
back
songs he's declaring crap
are not crap.
Yeah. No, totally,
they're great songs. But and this is something else the movie does is it pays no attention to timeline
none whatsoever
with the songs. It uses them to its advantage. It uses them when it serves the story,
right?
Not just, well, but this song didn't come out for 2 more years, so we can't sing it yet. Because like he's singing songs that didn't come out, I think, until like the 80s, because he sang
Crocodile Rock is the one,
and he's
at the Troubadour,
but that's accurate, I believe. But when he's pounding through songs at the piano and he's telling them that they're crap.
Yeah.
Oh, like there are songs that he was.
There are songs that came out much later because he did.
See, I didn't, I'm not informed enough to know that specifically. So like I couldn't necessarily identify them, which ones they were. But I think that's another great thing about the fantasy element.
Yeah.
Is that the way they play with the music and everything, it doesn't matter because first of all, Elton John and his family and everyone didn't start singing songs together. When you do that,
it prevents you from getting hung up on these details of like, but that's not when that happened or that's
and Bohemian Rhapsody, when they're telling a straight biopic, you're like, well, this song wasn't even out then because you take it so seriously.
Yeah, they're just like all of a sudden they're doing We Will Rock You as their third hit. I was like,
Exactly.
But I will also say that the three songs that he pounds through that the guy says are crap are all hits.
Yeah. Sure. Of course they
were. I mean, they sounded good to me, but he's like, but I guess for the time or whatever, he didn't, you know, he wanted this specific sound. So then they go to live together and they find an apartment or whatever.
Which I love, and then Elton John is dating the landlord. Who you recognize, the like that gal is in all of the Edgar Wright movies.
Oh, okay.
She's the annoying girlfriend in Hot Fuzz that gets her head cut off. Same gal. So
I thought she was Nick Frost.
No.
Okay.
You would be wrong.
Oh, okay.
Yes. So like, so they're working on these songs and then they start like tearing it up. And then while they're playing these like, you know, low level gigs, this is where they're introduced to Richard Madden, who I got to tell you, if they're going to cast Robert Pattinson as Batman, that dude's your Superman.
Oh, that's interesting.
I mean, if I don't know. You know what I mean? Like you're just, I'm watching him on screen. I've watched him on Game of Thrones. I've watched him in The Bodyguard, which you have, if you haven't seen it, it's on Netflix. It's awesome.
The Bodyguard.
It's not what you, so the original Bodyguard is Kevin Costner.
Right. I'm trying to think.
This is kind of, he's like a Secret Service agent who is charged with protecting, a very controversial Secretary of State in Britain.
He wants to make sure there's not a red wedding.
Exactly. Unfortunately,
He didn't learn his lesson.
But it's a very good show, and he's great on it. So as I'm watching this, and he's got the longer hair, and I was just like, this dude, like if they recast him, and they probably will at this point, this is your Superman. Like if you're gonna cast tiny Robert Pattinson, who actually
he's not
like 6 foot one.
Yeah. Fine. Everyone can bulk up. It's not.
I don't mean the stature isn't the thing. It's height.
Yeah.
Well, but I guess if you have long ears, it won't matter.
Yeah. Keaton wasn't tall either.
There's ways to
called movie magic.
Well, and that's in this one. Like you can see that. Like I don't think Taron Egerton is all that tall either.
Yeah.
So, but the way they just play them off.
You have 9-inch platform heels on all the time.
That's what I'm saying about the long ears.
Yeah.
But
first, so then they have that experience where they're with the soul guys.
Yeah.
And he's like, he has a girlfriend. And those guys are like, but you're gay.
And he was like, what?
Huh? And the songwriting partner at this point doesn't know. What was his name?
Bernie Taupin.
Bernie Taupin. Okay, yeah, sorry. And so he didn't know yet. And then I like it when there's that really that moment of tension. Because at this point in time, you don't know. You're like thinking most people probably aren't accepting.
Right.
And so Bernie's just looking at him. And Elton's like, is that a problem? And he's like, not for me. But it will be for your girlfriend.
Yeah, right.
Like, it was a really funny tension-breaking moment.
Yeah.
And then, of course,
he has to tell the girlfriend.
And he's like, oh, yeah, she took it pretty well or whatever. And then they flash to it, and she's throwing all his stuff out.
This is where you get that really touching moment of them on the roof where you think that, like, Elton kind of leans in. He thinks that they're on the same page, and he leans in for a kiss. And, like,
was handled great.
The way it's played, he's just like, look, man, I love you. But
I love
like that
there was no hate about it. There was no being weirded out about it.
Right.
The way that it played out, and I'm guessing this is true to their friendship because it says they've been friends for so long. But I just love that it didn't fall into any kind of a trope of this bad tension or
of Elton John pining for him for years.
It just was like
there are
moments.
Like, okay. Yeah. There are moments where they definitely do that.
Yeah,
and you can't tell if it's a romantic pine or if it's my friend is leaving.
Yeah,
me,
I think it's a friendship.
I took it as friendship.
So did I.
Yeah, like I think that you know that like he had feelings for this guy, and since he's gay, like that's how he was going to express them. And when he wasn't gay, he's like, oh, okay,
totally cool, no problem.
So you're my bro.
Yeah.
Right.
And it was great because you always expect it to cause some kind of rift, and it does not for a second. It's over at that point.
It causes a rift, but only because of Elton's addictions. Like, that's when the rift happens.
Well,
is because
that is the rift. Yeah. Not the kiss is all I mean.
No.
That was great. So that's over. But then they go to the apartment and she's throwing everything. And I think she threw out like his piano.
He's like, oh, no, she just broke my piano.
Like everything. So then they have to go and they move in with Elton's mom.
Right. And they're writing songs and they're doing all kinds of stuff. And then finally they find, I guess it is Crocodile Rock is like the one that hits.
They go to, so they're doing really well with their songs and their record sales, and then they send the record guy sends them
to America,
to the U.S. and to do, you know,
the Troubadour.
Yeah,
is that still around?
Yes. Yeah. Mike Nesmith just played a show there a year ago.
Yeah, I'd love to see a concert there.
Cool. It's very small, but it's legendary. And actually, I felt like the Troubadour scene actually undersold the importance of it because in reality, it was they'd been trying to break him in America and they were about to give up.
Oh.
And this was basically like their last chance. And
I didn't take that. Yeah, so that
and then
been
like when they're talking about who's in the club, like Neil Diamond, like they called in a favor and asked Neil Diamond to come and introduce him.
Oh.
So Neil Diamond introduced him. And so
that gave him the little
and so because
cred.
Of that, yeah, because at the time, I mean, not that Neil Diamond isn't a big artist now, but he was like a current hot charting artist. I mean, he was a big deal. And very much the present tense from a pop music standpoint. And then those other acts started coming because he did, I believe he did six nights at the Troubadour.
Elton did?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it became the show to see. And so all the big name acts were coming to see him. And so he really did get kind of welcome into that world. And it took him. And then I think like 2 or 3 months later is when they took Your Song to radio and like, boom. He was off.
Or game on, I guess, not over.
So this movie got me thinking, and I've thought about this stuff for a while, but the
How long would you say you thought about it?
A
while.
A few years.
Okay.
The music is so good, and Elton John is a legend, obviously. But we think about, like, Queen, the music of Queen. We think of all, the, you know, whether it's AC/DC, Van Halen, all these famous rock bands, all this music. And then I tried to think of today, and I tried to name one song.
Of
I couldn't.
Elton John's?
No, of any other artist. Like, I know that as you get older, it's like, oh, these kids
and
their music.
An age thing.
But I just feel like the songs they come up with now are disposable. Will we call the songs being made today, for the most part, that are on the radio, will they be making biopics and us going, that's a classic 2010 song?
I think every generation has, you know, like we're just not relating those songs in the same way that we did when we were younger.
Who are they though? And, who are, I can't.
But I
can't
see
even,
a Beyonce
Perry
movie.
Okay.
A Lady Gaga
Adele
movie.
Has
Taylor
songs.
Swift. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I just don't know if I would
movie.
Call like Taylor Swift songs like Elton John level. I don't know.
But those songs are huge.
But look at Elton John's parents.
Yeah.
They wouldn't have called those songs that either.
Yeah.
Well, you know what I mean?
It's just weird because I'm trying to name one song that's like, that is a classic and they'll be singing that for
so
the next 20 years.
I have had this conversation with people
where
I feel like it has become, it's going to take, so like music was in the garbage until 1994, 95, 93 maybe. And Nirvana and Pearl Jam came out and bam,
maybe that's what I'm not remembering because this seems so weird to me where I'm like, I just don't know.
It was all, you know, Scorpions and White Snake.
It was hair metal and then this the top 40 boy bands, New Kids on the Block.
And then here comes Nirvana. Here comes Pearl Jam. Here comes Alice in Chains. Here comes all these hard grunge bands and it
like Nine
it
Inch Nails, Rob
Tool,
Zombie,
all that
I'm
stuff.
Thinking that's the stuff I grew up with and I'm just like today Lady Gaga is great but like I see that as an act. I just don't see that as like as impressive.
The difference is those bands to me had something to say.
Just so you don't know, you see Lady Gaga as an act so because of her crazy wild onstage costumes.
It just, I don't know, to me,
to
Elton
me,
John
she
seems more authentic than Lady Gaga. Lady Gaga, because I've seen Stephanie Germanotta. Like, to me, Elton John, I feel like, was embracing who he is.
Right.
Lady Gaga created a character to play.
I think in 1975, when he's, you know, playing
rocking
shows
like
dressed up like Donald Duck, I don't know. I don't know that you would have said that.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
No,
I think you would have been like, because, and I always think it's weird that, like, I feel like his music was the most kind of serious and grounded when he was the most ridiculous on stage.
Yeah.
And that the less flashy he got on stage, the more poppy and disposable his music became.
Interesting.
Yeah, and like
those are great.
Those are great songs, but I mean like when you get into the era of I'm Still Standing, which I love that song,
it's a great song.
And I'm glad they ended on that one. It to me, I feel like that's kind of the moment that he really kind of steered into the MTV world of type of songs. But I also feel like it might be not counting the Lion King stuff, maybe his last great song.
Yeah.
I would agree with that.
Do you think maybe it's because people don't buy CDs anymore? Maybe we just don't live in a world like, to me, maybe it seems so disposable.
You see that,
because
that
I don't.
iTunes is gone.
Thank God.
Yeah.
What a virus. What a virus. But, you know, we don't buy albums anymore because if you hear a song, it's one song, right? But when you bought a CD, you're probably going to listen to the whole thing because you just spent $12.99 on it.
And that was purposeful.
Right.
And, you know, they deliberately killed the single because they could knew they could force you to give them 12 or 15 bucks to hear the
exactly.
song.
Exactly.
So did.
So now you hear one song and it's over, where if you listen to an whole album, you might find 3, 4, 5 songs.
But ironically, that's how rock and roll started, right? Like, it started with the 45.
Singles,
And you know,
B-side, maybe.
Yeah, and like, you know, those early artists, they didn't put out full records. I mean, that really didn't become the idea of the album as a cohesive unit collection of songs really didn't start until the Beatles.
Right, they used to put other people on the other side, right? Wasn't the B-side, would they just put their other
songs? It would just be a lesser song.
Okay. Yeah, a demo or something. Well, I mean, that's what it was. Yeah.
That's what they do. Yeah,
they didn't actually combine like a lesser artist.
No, it was,
okay, it was always them.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you get paid the same royalties for A or B-side. So like if you wrote the B-side, even if it didn't get played, you still got
good
paid A-side. The same.
Yeah.
So,
but yeah, like that's music, I think, back then. And even up until probably like 2000, like I think that generation of people were angry. Like they were the Gen Xers. They were angry.
They had stuff.
They had something to say. And I feel like our generation is a little, my generation is a little less angry.
Yeah. I mean, they still have stuff to say, but a lot of it I feel like is not that. It's just the catchy pop crap.
I mean,
and then,
so like, you know, it was like Korn or Disturbed and
but
things
it,
like that.
I will also say, when you say, well, it's just catchy pop crap, what's Crocodile Rock? What's Benny and the Jets?
Totally.
What's I mean, they didn't use it in this movie, but what's Don't Go Dragging My Heart Around?
Yeah.
What's Philadelphia Freedom?
Didn't they use it? They used it in that duet, didn't they?
I don't remember seeing Don't Go Dragging My Heart Around.
Yeah.
Or Don't Go Kicking My Heart Around.
I think so.
Yeah.
I feel like that's
they
the one
did.
That he sang
they
in
the duet.
Don't Go Breaking
duet.
My Heart. Don't, that's the song
that,
I'm trying to say.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
he sang that.
He sang that.
Did he?
Yeah.
I don't remember.
He's doing the duet when Richard Madden shows back up.
Okay.
And he's just like, are we taking five? He's like, oh, we're taking five. They were singing.
No, he was doing a song called Victim of Love.
No, that was Don't
when
Go
he's in the recording
heart.
Studio?
When Richard, with the girl? When Richard Madden shows
back.
The female,
back, to the him and the female
Kiki,
were singing.
Kiki, whatever her name. I thought he called her Kiki.
Well, Kiki, I think Kiki D is who sang the other song.
That's what it was.
God, I don't remember that at all.
Yeah. So when him and Richard Madden are hooking up in the closet,
right?
Pun intended.
Yeah.
But like they're singing, like he and Kiki are doing that duet, and he walks.
God,
in
I don't remember that at all.
And stops.
Okay.
So the Troubadour was the
massive show.
Was the huge
show. He meets Richard
Madden. He's really nervous, but like, you signed a contract, get out there. He does it. It's the floating scene. Really cool stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, Richard Madden's lurking in the crowd.
Right.
They keep cutting to him.
He goes to a part. This is where I kind of thought it was going to go into like Forrest Gump territory.
Yeah.
Where like, we're going to Mama Cass's house. And I was like, who are they going to cast for Mama Cass?
Right.
You know, but they don't do that. Like, you don't see any. Also, Tate Donovan is in this movie.
Who's that?
He's the guy who runs the Troubadour.
Oh, yeah. I couldn't tell who that was. I'm not familiar.
He's the voice of Hercules in the Disney cartoon. Oh. He was Mr. Jennifer
I kept
Aniston
wanting him to be Val Kilmer in my head.
He definitely had a Val Kilmer
look.
Is
that Gay Perry?
Gay Perry.
Yeah, I was looking at him like, he seems familiar, but I don't know
Potion Number 9.
Who is this supposed to
never
be?
Do that one.
That's the guy, Tate Donovan. Yeah. His claim to fame is he was dating Jennifer Aniston one point.
I wasn't following that closely, I guess.
That guy?
Yeah.
Oh.
And
he's
like
straight?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I did not.
No.
Oh, the actor.
Yes.
I thought you meant the character.
Oh, no.
And I was like,
in the actor.
Yeah, Jennifer Aniston was 9 at the time.
Yeah, I know. I was like, what? None of this is making sense to me.
So
Richard Madden approaches him, and that's when, you know.
They start, you know. Yeah. Then.
And this scene.
Bernie kind of bolts with his gal.
But this scene was very tasteful. So, because the whole thing leading up to it was like, this movie's rated R, and they're talking about male nudity and this and that.
You do see Taryn Edgerton's wiener.
Oh, I didn't.
Yeah, you do.
Really?
That scene, yeah.
Oh, maybe I saw the wrong aspect ratio.
It
cropped it off.
Problem, yeah.
But I mean, this scene was handled very tastefully in my mind. This was just as tasteful as any other love scene in another movie.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't think it was a like gratuitous rated R. Like, when they, I think maybe they were talking it up, and maybe that was like a ploy to sell more tickets,
too. I think that's probably true.
But again, it's like then you got the backlash from people being like, well, this doesn't need to be a rated R movie and blah, blah, blah.
Well, they definitely but it wasn't the language is what probably gets
yeah,
it.
Yeah, but I mean, but the sex scene, it was not rated R for gratuitous sex scene.
No.
It was a very passionate, well-done love
scene.
There's
a blowjob scene.
Yeah, but I'm talking about this love scene.
Sure, sure.
Yeah,
sure.
I just mean that it wasn't like they were just like, well, we're going to throw all this crap in here and, you know, and just push the limits or whatnot.
I kind of wish that Bohemian Rhapsody had done this.
Well, I think everybody wishes they would have done
this.
I
think this is what we would have gotten.
Yes.
Probably.
This, the Sacha Baron Cohen movie was going to be a rated R.
So, yeah. So they, and then
so they're a thing, and he basically hijacks. So this guy is a record
mogul.
He's in management.
Yeah.
And so he basically goes to the original record, the people that gave him his start and all that.
I took him to be more of like a business manager.
He's a manager.
Yeah. Than like the other people were like, a record label that were also handling.
Yes,
right.
Exactly. Yeah. He didn't own a label. But he was his manager.
Right.
Yes. So he's like looking over the contracts, and he eventually gets them out. And you feel bad for them because, like, yeah, the record label guy was a dick in the beginning, but like they gave him a start, and once he proved that he had the songs, like it seemed like those that
they
crew
were
was
doing,
pretty tight.
They were doing right.
They were
by
all
him.
Making money.
Right.
You know, they did give him his start, and he kind of bit the hand that fed him.
Yeah.
And then you know Richard Madden's just like, hey, it's nothing personal. Trying to convince Elton,
yeah,
who obviously
business.
Was not comfortable with it.
Right.
But had to play it cool like afterwards.
And a lot of people, especially when you get a certain level, they have both.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, because you need both. Like you, because the record label has their own interests that aren't necessarily always aligned with your career.
Right.
Exactly.
And so, or they'll, you know, they'll talk you into doing things to use you as leverage to help some baby band that you don't care about. So, like, at some point, you do need this personal manager.
Absolutely.
To help you pick the right, go make the right career choices.
Right.
From a big picture standpoint, you know, just to protect your interests.
And that's what he was doing.
Right.
But he was also riding the Elton John cash train.
Right.
Because he was, I mean, that's they keep referencing that Elton John is just cranking out hit after hit after hit.
Yeah.
And he's making so much money. And finally, they're just like, you're a multi-million. Why are you living at home?
Yeah.
Like, you're a multi-millionaire.
So before he takes him, before Richard Madden's character takes him away, they go on this big shopping spree and another really cool, fantastical thing where he's, like, walking through and buying up paintings and buying outfits. And
I did love that line where he's like, you know that $1,000 painting or whatever? And they're just like, yeah.
Yeah.
He goes, it's upside down.
Yeah, it was great.
That was a good line. Like, it's a good throwaway line, but I enjoyed it.
So now Elton is, you know, spending money wildly, and he's with Richard Madden, but Richard Madden is interested in the money. And not so much interested in Elton.
Right.
And it's really sad to watch as that progresses throughout
the
film.
Yeah, I mean, and they definitely hit on the fact that everybody, like, that the whole opening song is I Want Love.
Yeah.
And this is what this is. Like,
he's searching for it everywhere.
And when he had it with, and it's a different kind of love, but when he had that love with Bernie, he didn't know what to do with it. Because he got what sort of what he wanted, but then it wasn't exactly what he wanted, so he pissed it away and tried to push him away. And
but yeah, the parents have done that, and then you get this Richard Madden character who you think is going to be good for him, and he seems, you know, and there's passion there, but obviously it wasn't true love. It was more lust, and also the lust for his money and everything. And so, you know,
but I will also say, like, it didn't look like he was tanking his career either.
No, I think he was a successful business manager.
I got the vibe, at least from the movie, that he, like, that he was doing his job,
right.
He was also cheating on him,
and
he also ended up not being very nice to him, but that he wasn't, like,
he was
deliberately tanking the guy's
career. I feel like it was all business. That was where, like, you know, their relationship started off seeming strong, but then, he wasn't interested. He's cheating on Elton and all that. But in the meantime, he's still, like, in between getting blowjobs from the pool boy or whatever.
Right, right.
It's like he's on the phone making deals.
Man, that's... He's like, it wasn't a heart attack. It was a chest episode. He'll be where you need him to be.
I do think that, he's still making millions, and he wasn't stealing his money. He was managing it. But later on, we find out when Elton finally has enough of it, he's like, well, I'll be making 20% long after you're
dead.
So he obviously, he was very good at contracts.
Well, I think that's pretty standard, though. Like, if somebody has a hit record,
right,
and you manage that, then you keep earning some sort of income.
It didn't seem
off
nefarious.
Of
I just meant that he was obviously knew what he was doing.
I think
and...
he was just making the point that, like, hey, if you want to flush your life down the toilet, he's like,
I don't care.
I'll still be making money and use the success use you on my resume to find the next you.
Right.
I think it was still supposed to be mean, though. It came out very mean.
It was absolutely mean. Yeah,
But it wasn't nefarious at all. Right. He really hammered that home. God. And wasn't that right before he overdosed?
They have this party, and then, like, he's kicking Richard, like, Elton John is kicking the guy out
of the
house.
He finds
the
assistant and is blowing him outside in front of the pool boy.
And then he's just like, and then all of a sudden, here come his mom and his
oh this was great like, the old yeah. neighbors
like, oh great
he used to be this shy little boy now look at him and don't step on my gown
which is a good like so it's such great. A perfect like little throwaway line.
Oh, I loved it.
And this is where he overdoses and falls in the pool just because he's done, like he's checked out.
And the mom's new husband, I feel like in this scene he called him dad.
He did call him dad.
So I'm like, that's really cool. That like, I mean, the guy at first you thought he was going to be a total F up.
Yep. Totally. Like, I love the fact that like it kind of, well, not unlike Ant-Man, went against the trope of the stepfather has to be a D-bag.
Because, you know, the mom's cheating on the dad in a car, and you think, oh, this is some scumbag that's paying her or something.
Right.
But really, fine. He was a stand-up dude.
Well, I feel like they hit on that when, like...
But you do see him kind of wanting his money.
Yeah.
Like, well, they're trying to buy that house.
When we get to that scene, yeah.
Oh, I think both parents were taking advantage of Elton. She is awful.
Yes.
But I just... But you feel like they had a really good family relationship. I mean, before the super stardom and all that stuff... It seems like he took over as his dad, and he looked at him that way. He gave him the affection that he wanted.
And the haircut.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was like, man, if you want to do rock and roll, you got to
cut
your hair like this.
That was back when he was a kid, but didn't he say he wanted to look like Elvis?
He wanted to look like Elvis.
Slicked back.
Yeah.
It was great.
Everybody that time frame wanted to look like Elvis.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So Elton's just drinking, and then Bernie comes upstairs, and he brings two women up to meet Elton, and then Elton's just in a chair drinking and all messed up. And so
pops some pills and
falls over. They leave, and then he takes the pool.
This is where we get another...
Sequence was cool underwater.
It was cool. And I thought as soon as the people flew in, I was like, this could go one of two ways. This could be like him just like envisioning whatever's happening, or this is people diving in to be the one to save
him. Yeah, I love that, how it was like at first it looked like people were diving in to swim or whatever.
Right.
But eventually they reached down and get him. But this is where we first hear Rocket Man, right?
Yeah.
That's what the kid's playing on the piano in a spacesuit.
Yeah.
So it was a real, because I'm waiting for Rocket Man. I love that song, and it's Rocket Man, right?
Yeah.
So I'm waiting.
It's called Rocket Man.
Yeah, well, and that's true too, yeah. So, but it's one of my favorite songs of his, and so when they finally do it, it was really cool. And
so we should also say that while all of this is going on, we're getting bookends, or we're getting like, not bookends, ends, but inserts of Elton in this focus group.
It's the AA meeting.
It is the AA.
It's a framing sequence.
It is.
It's rehab, right?
Well, we don't know that until we get to the
end.
But
that's what I mean.
Yeah, I guess
at the
end,
it's not AA. It's
at the end, you find out it's actually rehab.
That's the thing. So in the beginning, even though I walked in a little late, but they cut to him talking, getting mad in the group or whatever. So you don't know why, but eventually we find out that he finally leaves. He leaves a big concert and everything, and he says, I'm going to get help. And so it bookends with him, and you find out it's a rehab facility.
Right.
It keeps cutting back and forth.
Those inserts, he is losing more and more of this costume. So, like, in the beginning, he just kind of snaps the ears off. And then the next time we see it, he's got, like, the shoulder tarnish.
Yeah,
and
thought
off.
About that. That's a great metaphor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where
he's shedding all
he's
the...
getting rid of the, all of that stuff. And then, so by the time
I also was like, I feel sorry for everyone else in this meeting.
Yeah.
He's like, hey, I'm Elton John. I'm going to spend the next 2.5 hours telling you my whole life story. I know it's group, but suck it.
You're going to deal with it.
Yeah.
Oh, then the people leading are like, did that check clear? Oh, yeah. We're going to give him as much time as
you
need.
Whatever you need, Elton.
But it's also, he's wearing like a devil costume. So the fact that he's shedding devil costume parts... was another really good metaphor.
Yeah. So by the time we get to the last part of that, he's just, it's funny.
He's naked, and that's why it's rated R.
Right, yeah. But he's got like this black Puma tracksuit. But if you look at it, like even the Puma is bedazzled. So just like even when he is stripped to his core, he's still doing it. Yeah, exactly.
I love that Dodgers outfit. Like the whole thing is bedazzled. It's a baseball uniform.
It's a onesie.
It's like completely bedazzled. It's just like so fantastic.
So yeah, I think the tipping point is he meets his mom and stepdad, and they're just like, you need to write us a check for this house in.
Well, it's heartbreaking because his dad's already done this, right?
His
autograph part.
Oh, yeah.
So we've already seen that the dad, we thought maybe they were going to reconvene, and us as an audience, we're like, don't do it. You know this. The dad is a jerk, and now he only wants to talk to you for your money. Like, you could just see that writing on the wall. That the only reason that the dad even wants to meet with him is to ask for a favor or something.
And he just kind of says, he's like, look, we just got to get out. Like, every time we turn on the news, it's the drugs, it's the booze, it's the men.
But now the dad has a new family, and you can tell the dad's way more close with the boys. Yeah,
and he's being a good dad now.
Right?
Yeah. And so it's like, these kids love sports, and he gets these kids.
Yeah, he's very close and holding them. Remember, he won't even hug Elton, and the dad's picking up the kids. Yeah. And stuff, so it's so heartbreaking. And then when he does the record thing Tom mentioned, you know, get it signed for a friend, like, no, I still don't care about you.
God,
he says the boys are a fan of you, and he gets an autograph for someone else, but the dad's just like, okay, great, like, you know,
cool.
So now you go to meet with the mom and the stepdad, and then, you know, the mom has never shown him any approval. When he tells her that he's gay, she's like, yeah, I've known this forever, which is a funny moment. And then she's like, you're never gonna find true love.
Right.
She was just awful.
I know you think it's going to be this great moment of bonding. Of course, honey, you are. We don't care. And it's just like, I mean, it's fine. I'm not going to tell you how to live your life, but you're going to be miserable.
I do like where she, I don't like it, but it's an interesting phrase where she says, you're choosing to be alone.
Yeah.
And I think that's a common misconception.
Especially back then.
Absolutely.
How heartbreaking for Elton John watching this movie, and obviously Elton John was closely involved in the production, like, to see what he had to deal with, and he has fame and fortune and all that, but look at the love that he sought. And
from everywhere he looked,
it just was,
and he got it from one person
in the face.
Yeah.
You know, and he pushed that person away because of the drugs and the booze and the debauchery, I guess.
But, you know,
actually, you know what? Probably not even the debauchery. It was the drugs and the booze. Like, that was the problem.
Well, it just, he lost sight of who he was. And,
and the debauchery, like, I don't know if you've seen any other rock star biopics, but that's not just a gay thing.
No, it's not just a gay thing at all.
Absolutely not. But yeah, so then the mom is, we know she's already a jerk, and then, of course, they're sitting down, and they're like, so, yeah, we found a house, you know, we need a check for that.
Like, way out in the county or whatever, and he was like, you know what, I'll write you a check. And then we get another song, and then he comes back, and he's eating, like...
He goes to the bathroom, but then it's another meeting with...
It turns into a meeting.
It was
with,
a different
with Bernie.
Dinner with Bernie,
and Bernie's I gotta go, dude. Like, I
what
can't...
song was that? Everybody was singing it. I really loved this moment too.
I'm trying to
all
remember.
The patrons at the restaurant were singing like the chorus
was
of
it,
the song.
Was it Blue Jean Baby?
I don't think so. No, because Blue Jean Baby is when. Who comes out and like someone's in Bernie or someone's in blue jeans? Like, I don't know. I remember the visual of it. It wasn't
this. It's
scene,
funny.
Though.
Like, he's when they one of the things I remember is they're singing. He's singing your song, and he's getting all.
I love that song.
It's a great song. Also, Ewan McGregor does a great version of
it. Oh, yeah.
From,
well, I love Moulin Rouge, so that's only right. Like, I especially love it because of. Yeah.
But what you don't like.
It's called the Elephant Love Medley. Love that.
Is that really what it's called?
Moulin Rouge, okay. Yeah.
So the way the movie kind of plays it is you think it's Elton singing to Bernie, but Bernie wrote it.
Yeah.
So Bernie wrote that for Elton. So it's like, it's a double.
That's a great moment. That's when they're living with the parents.
Yes.
And Bernie's going to shave and he hears the song playing.
Right.
It's just this amazing music to
him. But the film is really smart and it plays it two ways where it's like, it could be Elton singing to Bernie.
He's looking at him like, yeah.
Right. But then you realize that Bernie wrote it.
Yeah. So it's not like, yeah.
Right.
So it's really, yeah, it's great the way
they
do it.
Were singing Don't Let the Sun Go Down on Me.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, right. Okay.
So that was, I mean, it just, the way, again, everything from when it turned to Taron Egerton on, you know, like, I just, the kid stuff didn't do it as much, but once he was in it, the way they introduced these songs organically, and I think, like Tom touched upon earlier, they told the story with the songs. It wasn't like a chronological thing.
Right.
It was just whenever it fit the story. I mean, it's like with like, it is a jukebox musical. So
right.
It's like with Mamma Mia. They just throw them in where they're setting a story to the songs.
Rock of Ages.
It's just the story happens to be his.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So exactly. And so they did a really neat thing the way they were able to tell Elton John's story and they weren't just doing a random story with his music. And it just, they wrapped them around his life in a way that felt so organic. Like, they told this story with these songs, and everyone hit. It's like when you watch Guardians of the Galaxy, and James Gunn does these deep cuts, and the music just fits that scene so well, and it's not on the nose. It's the meanings there and everything. So with this movie, you get the songs, and you're just like, God, that works so well.
And it's, yes, you're right. Everything, like, in, like I said, when a normal musical, I'm immediately just like, why are we singing? What are we doing here? But
I wonder why, because this just because it's about
one,
someone that you know,
but this
it's like
one
this is
different.
A musical.
Yeah, but this one is different because everything is in a dream sequence.
Not everything, but
for the most part.
But I
can accept.
I guess I just look at musicals as like it's
that's the world they're in.
That's the world they're in.
That's
in the same way that like you know that you know, that
Superman.
Iron Man's got that suit, or you know what I mean? That's the world.
When you're watching a musical, you have to accept the rules of a musical that people tell.
No, I don't.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah. If we were watching, you know, I don't know, if we were watching Kramer versus Kramer, and then all of a sudden, 40 minutes in, Dustin Hoffman flies to this appointment with his lawyer.
Oh, wait a minute.
I'd be like, but this isn't a superhero movie, right? Yeah. But like, if all of a sudden Spider-Man swings on a web to meet with his attorney, I'm like, well, of course, we're watching a Spider-Man movie.
He has to go see his attorney.
And that's how I view musicals.
I get that.
I think some are better at helping you suspend that suspension of disbelief than others.
Yeah.
Certainly. But yeah, like I'm willing to meet it halfway, and that like this is a thing where people sing to express their emotions.
I get that. You know? Yeah, and I guess for me, like I said, this one I'm able to detach because everything is done in the dreams. Like it's all done through him telling a story, so I can accept that. So anyway, like
it works for you. I mean, you can't. Not, I mean, you know what works for you and what doesn't.
Right.
So it's like we can't argue with that. I mean, the logic may not make sense to us, but obviously this film did something that where a musical can't usually reach you.
Yeah, no,
and this
I was
one
in.
Did, but this is a musical.
Yeah,
make no mistake about it.
Every other biopic ever has just been the songs are.
They're playing their songs.
You see them perform or you see them record.
Did you watch The Dirt?
Yes.
How was that?
It was okay.
All right.
Wait, I didn't watch it. I read
the Netflix one.
I read it.
Oh, okay.
You liked the book. I can't believe you haven't watched the
movie.
I just haven't gotten around
to it yet. And it's like, you're not one you can watch when the kids are floating around.
Yeah,
sure,
right.
You know.
So, yeah. So then
kids are a bunch
he's
of prudes.
It is fun.
Gonna keep it that way.
My aunt asked me, she's like, did you see Rocket Man? And I said, I did. And she was like, is it suitable for a 13-year-old? And I was like,
no.
I got to tell you, like.
Probably not.
So my feeling 15-ish is.
15-ish is probably okay.
That's kind of what I was thinking.
There are some sex scenes, but they're not super graphic.
That's what we were. Yeah.
And honestly, like, I know they made a big deal about how they didn't tone down the sex scenes in order to get, in order to keep it R and more authentic. And it's also ironic that they want to keep it authentic when it's so fantastical.
Sure.
But I also feel like they didn't have to do much to have kept this movie a PG-13.
I don't change some language and
I'm really surprised they made that choice that if they were gonna make that choice. Yeah, it's gonna sound weird. Why wasn't there more gay sex? But but I feel
because
like
they handled it really well. We talked about this. You were in the bathroom, and I'm like, it was just
sorry.
They know, but no, but they handled.
You know, excited again when you talk about gay sex,
I know, right? but they, I was telling Joe in the audience that they handled that sex scene just as well as any really well handled love scene. It wasn't some. You know, like they were trying to make it this, let's push the R rating.
Right.
It was a love scene. It was a very passionate, well-filmed.
I really wonder if it would have gotten an R if it was not gay.
Maybe.
Because I didn't see anything. And Joe said you saw his wiener.
You
but
do see his wiener.
I didn't notice. Yeah,
I didn't even notice. So Are you sure you're not thinking them all?
Positive. Oh,
okay.
My God. But, we'll get into that.
But I thought because they hyped it up so much. I watched it. I'm like, this was handled really well. Like the way they filmed it. It just seemed like, you know, two people in a love scene. And so I think that the drug use, I it's not necessarily just like nudity, but like when you have that much drug use,
that's
anytime
true.
You interject that.
Yeah.
And then with the language. So
there was a lot of drug use. I forgot.
And a lot
that.
Of language.
Yeah.
Which it just adds to the authenticity. Yeah. I think like that's probably how they talked.
Yeah. And I just respect that they wanted to tell the story. In an interview, Elton John said, I just haven't lived a PG-13 life. That's what he said. I think that's great. Like, you know, they put, because Elton John is super rich and someone was,
dude, like
we were talking about
like
this,
next
like,
level rich.
Like, you know, Queen versus Elton John. And I know collectively they maybe almost have as much as him all combined.
I don't know.
But it's
dude,
like, but
like,
Elton John.
No, it, Elton, I think Elton John has more hits than Queen.
I think.
But no, but yeah, totally. But I just mean money wise.
He's only got to split it two ways.
Yeah.
Right.
But Queen, when they get a writing credit for the whole band. Like, they got to split it, what, five ways?
Yeah. Right.
And so, just based on that, and, like, just real quick, look at this run. So, starting in 1970, Your Song, followed by Leave On, Into Tiny Dancer, Rocket Man, Honky Cat, Crocodile Rock, Daniel, Saturday Night's All Right for Fighting,
Ooh,
Goodbye,
good
Yellow Brick Road,
good song.
Let's Not Talk About Step Into Christmas, Candle in the Wind, Benny and the Jets, Don't Let the Sun Go Down on Me, The Bitch Is Back, Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds. It's now 1974.
Yeah.
That's 4 years of songs.
So, yeah, he did Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds.
He covered it. He went through a period where he was covering songs. I think because
he does it in this.
He was pumping out stuff so fast. Yeah. And then Philadelphia Freedom, Someone Saved My Life Tonight, Island Girl, his cover of Pinball Wizard.
The Pinball Wizard one, I was thinking.
Yeah, I forgot that he had covered that.
I didn't know that, and I'm like, this doesn't sound like an Elton John song.
Yeah, no, it's a Who song.
Yeah.
And then Don't Go Breaking My Heart, Sorry seems to be the hardest word. And then he starts to, like, hit a fallow period, and you get, I don't know, Crazy Water, Bite Your Lip.
Run, though, was amazing.
Yeah, and so that's all between 1970 and... essentially 1975.
Holy cow, 5 years.
And then I think that's when he tried to do like disco stuff.
Yeah.
And then
you got to go with the times. So yeah.
And then that's when you see him recording A Victim of Love, which basically didn't chart anywhere. And then
I feel like my dad had Yellow Brick Road on vinyl.
I think everybody had
it. Yeah, that's probably true.
It was issued to you.
Yeah. If you had a record player, you had to. They checked and made sure you had it.
But then in the '80s, it starts to pick back up. You get Little Genie, and then
Don't bring up genies, please.
and then Blue Eyes, Empty Garden. They don't come quite as fast and furious. But then I'm Still Standing, Sad Song, Say So Much, Nikita. Like, that's his MTV era. And, you know.
Hey, that's original. That original one's a good movie.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, he obviously has a ton, is a huge catalog. But my whole point of this was it's like Elton John didn't need the money to make this. He wanted to tell his story.
Sure.
And so it's great that he was, without that motivation of trying to just sell more records. I'm not saying he won't because of this.
I don't know his... Certainly he'll sell records, and I mean, he's not averse to that. But I think it's less about selling records for him as cementing his legacy.
Yeah,
as an icon of rock music.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
It's such a weird thing to say. Like, when you go back and look at those hits, those are all rock hits. And the Elton John that we know now isn't that rock guy.
Right. Well, you know, that's the thing, is because I didn't grow up with him. I know the songs and stuff. So when they keep talking about rock and roll, I'm like, Elton John is rock and roll?
Yeah. And
especially
that list of hits, I just went through like top 40 charting hits.
Sure.
Like, I didn't talk about a lot of the rock stuff that is staples of rock radio, but isn't necessarily like big, like they didn't necessarily chart at the time. So when you start talking about stuff like Take Me to the Pilot, Funeral for a Friend / Love Lies Bleeding, Gray Seal, like there's like he's got a lot of songs that are like staples of like of classic rock radio that weren't necessarily top 40 hits. Yeah. And he was really kind of one of those first artists that was like, I'm going to go over here and make rock records, and I'm going to go over here and make top 40 records. Because, you know, you grew up in St. Louis, you're listening to KC95,
sure,
and you'd hear your song,
Crocodile
and Daniel
Rock,
and Crocodile Rock, but you would also hear Take Me to the Pilot, uh-huh, and Gray Seal. But you wouldn't hear Don't Go Breaking My Heart. Yeah.
No, they weren't gonna, that over on Y98.
Right, yeah, or KHTR or whatever the top 40 station was at the time. You know, you wouldn't hear Philadelphia Freedom or Pinball Wizard or, you know, in the same way when Rod Stewart tried to replicate that, like, Casey wouldn't play Do You Think I'm Sexy?
Yeah.
No.
But they'd play all the other stuff, right? And so, like, he was kind of the first artist to really, like, I could be a rock guy and a top 40 guy, and it's okay.
And he did it.
He did.
And did. So, like, the last thing in this movie
and the
is
other
the,
thing I really like about this is that he's alive. I love that they can tell these stories when someone's alive.
Right.
It's just they always
How
make
often
these
do we get
they
away
always
dead?
Make these biopics about these these rockers, and whether it's, you know, it doesn't matter if it's Freddie Mercury or Kurt Cobain or, you know, whoever they try to make about.
That Last Days movie is garbage. Yeah.
But it's just like, oh, they made one where the person alive can see it and help with the story because it's there and not do it. And obviously this one didn't seem like it was a totally
but sometimes
self-
having the artist there was a bad thing.
Well, that was
because they want to whitewash
that's
everything.
Like a queen.
And kudos to him, and I'm sure there are stories he didn't want told and they weren't told.
Well, this is exactly what I was just about to say, is my point. It didn't seem like he took over total, like, censoring control of the story. He told it to what seemed authentically because the rough stuff was in there.
Right, yeah. There are times in this movie where Elton John doesn't look so good.
No, when he's all hopped up and he dismisses Bernie and everything, that's the point where it's like, you're a jerk, dude, because Bernie's so nice. And
I also think, you know, and we didn't talk about this tons, but this is... almost as much a Bernie Taupin biopic.
Yeah. It is.
As it is an Elton John biopic.
Really I didn't know how main of a character he was going to be.
Yeah, and which I'm really glad because Elton John, and clearly Elton John feels this way too, would not be Elton John without Bernie Taupin.
See, that's the other thing. That's the great part is this is an Elton John movie, and they didn't hide the fact that Bernie wrote all those songs.
You know, one of the scenes, it was a small scene, but I really loved it, the fact that it's like the whole time you're watching Bernie Taupin kind of like peek around the edges as he's on tour, and you can kind of see he's like, oh, you're the face of all this.
Yeah. He says
you're I'm writing the songs, or at least writing the lyrics, and you're the one who everybody knows, and you're the famous one. And there's that moment where Elton John turns to him, and Elton John is jealous of Bernie Taupin because he's like, you get to walk the street.
Right.
Like, you get to have your privacy.
And you get the reward of all the money and stuff. But
you're still making the money. Now, he doesn't get probably the performance money, which is a lot. But
he can live a lifestyle that is very comfortable.
And he's also not probably living quite as lavish a lifestyle as Elton John chose to.
But I do like they're in the record exec's office. And
they're trying to get Bernie
to sing, and he was like, no, like this is the guy you want. Like, I can't do what he does. And then I do like where Elton's like, fuck it, I'll just walk away with these songs. And the guy's like, whoa, like, I didn't mean that. Let's not go crazy. Yeah,
right.
Yeah. So the last scene of this movie is we're back in rehab.
We find out that this wasn't an AA meeting. It was actually group therapy in rehab.
And he's confronted with all of his demons.
Did he leave a sold out concert to go to rehab?
I've never heard that story.
That's a crazy implication.
I don't think that's...
I feel like
first of all,
your
fans...
Heard.
I mean, I know it was for him or whatever, but I mean, when you have a stadium and then you have to you piss off that many people, and then you have to refund them all.
That's part of how their addictions get so bad, is they won't do that sometimes.
Yeah.
And the drug usage
but
ramps
it's like you
up.
You could go right
on
after. I just mean to leave in the beginning of a concert.
But also don't forget, Chris Cornell killed himself like 3 hours after a concert.
Chester Bennington's the same way.
Yeah, I mean, I remember doing a Stone Temple Pilots show got canceled because Scott Weiland had to go to rehab. And like, that didn't work, but like, if it should have, like, I mean? Like,
no, I mean, that's good for him doing it. I just was like, did he really?
But I don't know that's true.
That might have been a little dramatization.
Might have been.
So he's confronted with all of his demons. Well,
especially because he put on all that costume and everything already. Like, go before you do all the makeup and the costume.
Right. He's confronted by Bernie. He's confronted by Richard Madden's character, his mom, his
dad.
That
was cool in rehab. Yeah. All the people that did not show him the love that he was looking for.
And then the little Elton walks out, and they have this moment. He was like, are you going to,
he says, aren't you going to hug me? Oh, I thought he said, aren't you, or what happened to his real name? Because little Elton is still.
They say that too. Yeah. He's like,
the main line is like, aren't you going to hug me? And of course, they embrace.
Yeah.
And then Bernie and Elton have this moment where they're sitting on the park bench. He's like, if you're ready, like, I got some stuff. And he was like, I don't know if I'm there yet. So Bernie gets up to leave, and he hands Elton an envelope that looks just like the envelope that he got in
the very
beginning of the movie.
What was the song?
I'm Still Standing.
I'm Still Standing.
Okay. Yeah, and that was I could read the lyrics.
Yeah,
so I knew
that
song was because I know the I really like that
song. I think
that's
my favorite of
his
songs.
And I wouldn't go that far, but I really like this song. A Funeral for a Friend, probably
that's a
good
song.
But I could see the lyrics, and I was like, we're going to do I'm Still Standing.
Cool. Which makes sense.
And it's very appropriate, but it's also sends you out on an upbeat number.
It does. Yeah.
And
song's great.
They recreate the video.
Like, shot for
that
shot.
That was fantastic.
Shot
shot. Well, because it was the video, I think.
Yeah.
He was implanted in.
No.
Backup people you don't think were really...
I don't know.
Because he stood out. He looked clean, even though they did a little fuzzy film thing.
I didn't look at it that close.
I could tell that he was so high def. But like fake static, or fake film grained, and they were real footage.
Right.
I'm 95% positive.
I
wanted to go watch the video because I'm like, I think they put him in front of the real.
Maybe they did.
Yeah.
Maybe they did.
Just because the difference, they would have looked the same if it was recreated. Yeah. So that's why I think it was so authentic, because it was the 80s people.
But you get a nice little rundown that Bernie and Elton are still working
still
together.
Still friends.
Haven't had a fight.
Yeah.
I guess when Elton yells at you, it's not a fight because you
fight.
Didn't yell back, right? Because I was thinking about it.
Right,
never had a fight.
Yeah, he never got mad. But he didn't get mad at him. He kind of, I think, at least the movie portrays it, that he kind of always understood his stress level.
You know,
Elton
apologized to Bernie in that same scene.
Right.
He walked away, and then he's like, wait. And he's like, I'm sorry. And
he's
he goes,
like,
I know.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Bernie knew that it wasn't him. That's, yeah. I mean, that happens to us in real life, you know, with people. It
on the show.
Well, yeah. I mean, it happens here. It can happen anywhere. But where, you know, when people are angry and they say things they don't mean, I mean, this is just life where it's like they take things out on whoever's the closest to them. And you know it's not personal. I mean, you can't take that stuff personal when people are going through crap.
Yeah,
it's
I totally get it.
They got their stuff going on. Let them do their little thing and they'll come back and it'll be fine.
Right. I think Kevin's trying to apologize to us.
I think that's what's happening right now.
No, I was waiting for an apology, but continue. On.
And then you get you know, Elton is married and he's got two sons, and so he's living. He's been sober for 28 years, which is fantastic.
Still got a problem with shopping though.
Still got. I like that line.
That was nice.
So why did we didn't mention? So he got married. Was that like a fake cover up marriage to a woman or what?
I don't know. There was a period where he was saying he was bi, and I don't know if it was part of that.
I didn't know because I don't know the history enough either. I didn't know if it was because they slept in separate rooms.
I think he thought it would like calm him down.
Yeah,
like it was like Freddie got married.
Yeah. But I mean, did he really care for her? And then it was
because
they were in separate rooms. And
I think
stuff,
he cared
so
for her because I think he cared for her. He just didn't want to have sex with her. Yeah.
Right. But that's what I mean. Was it a calculated decision? Like, I do care about this person and it will make some kind of, because they just don't go into it.
Right.
They get married. The next scene they get divorced.
Yeah. I think they do both because there is that scene in the car where Richard Madden's like, we got to get you a girlfriend.
Yeah.
Because we don't want them. Yeah.
And that's what I was thinking. It's a cover up that he found. But also, you know, so.
I mean, it's different. I think Freddie and Mary had a different connection than, you know what I mean? Like that was a deeper connection that they play on, where in this one, it was, she's in the scene for, you know, what, 5 minutes tops?
Yeah. No, I mean, she's at a recording studio and then they get married the next scene, and the next scene they're coming out of their separate bedrooms and they get divorced.
Right.
Because in the next scene.
And she does the same thing where he pours like half a cup of vodka and then fills it with orange juice. And he says,
right,
I'm sorry.
Morning.
And she goes, I know.
Yeah, right in the morning. Yeah. The just first thing he has to wake up and drink a half a full
half
tall
a,
cup of vodka.
Half a glass of vodka. And
I mean, there was orange juice in there. Kudos to him for
was
putting
there?
The orange juice in there. A little splash to make
splash
it.
Splash of orange juice. Take the edge off, I guess.
But this is great. I
can't say that I didn't like it. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the songs. I don't have the affinity for it, but I didn't
like you
like
wouldn't
it.
Watch it again?
Probably not.
No.
Unless like the boss was like, I want to see that movie. I was like, well, I guess I'm watching it again.
Yeah. Because I had to go to fit it in for the recording because we're recording earlier than usual. I had to go, well, Katie, it was at work, but she would really like it. Like, I think I'll take her to see it again. I thought this was good enough to where the music's so strong and the performances are so good where, like, I could watch Mamma Mia over and over again. It's just those jukebox musicals. It's like, you've got the great music.
Right.
There, and if it's fun.
You already know that part works.
Yeah.
You're halfway there.
Right. Would you watch this again?
Yeah, I would watch this again.
I
I enjoyed this. I thought this was really well done, and I think it was written to be taken to Broadway.
I mean, it is. I mean, it's just like Mama
or the West End.
Yeah, you could do this on Broadway. The only thing I worry about now, this was so unique and so good, is how many other musical biopics we're going to get musical.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
You know someone's going to try to replicate this.
Absolutely. And well, I guess we'll have to wait and see how it does at the box office, but most likely someone is going to try to replicate this because it was extraordinarily well done.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Can we let's get the Metallica one.
Or Nirvana. So
I
guess I guess that's it for this one. Let's go around the table and everyone can say where to find them.
This is Joe. You can follow me on the Twitter at Joey Butts, BUTTS21.
This is Kevin. Follow me on Twitter at Kevin R. Brackett.
And this is Tom. You can follow me on Twitter at Roger Kubert or on Facebook at Facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. If you want to find the show online, you can do that at Facebook.com/Real Spoilers. While you're there, join the League of Show Sharers. And of course, check out our Patreon account at patreon.com/real spoilers. So that's it for this one. Coming up with the next one, we will tackle Ma. So until then, Buddy plays the Apollo.
I'm a rocket man. Rocket man. Burning out his fumes out here alone. I think it's gonna be a long, long time. Touchdown, bring me round again and fine. I'm not the man they think I am. Oh, oh, no, no, no. I'm a rocket man. Rocket man. Burning out his fuse out here alone.
Time to
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.